Good morning. My name's Jill, and we asked people to bring some beautiful things in this morning, and a few people are going to share about their beautiful things, but there are many other beautiful things up here, too, so after the service, feel free to come up and ask people as they pick up their beautiful thing what it's all about. We asked people to bring beautiful things because typically, or often, the things that we find to be beautiful are beautiful because of what they remind us of, their story. But why do stories matter? Well, we spent the past several weeks in a sermon series about wilderness, and we talked about Jesus and his wilderness experiences. We talked about the Israelites and their wilderness experience. And to follow along that train of thought and frame our time this morning, I want to direct us to a story in Joshua 4, and I'm going to be skipping around a bit so you can just listen, okay? In Joshua chapter 4, the Israelites have been in the wilderness for nearly a generation. This is a long time. They've had ups and they've had downs. They've had good times and bad times. And they are now standing at the banks of the Jordan River. They want to be on the other side. I will start in chapter 3. When the people broke camp to cross the Jordan, the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant went ahead of them. Now the Jordan is at flood stage all during harvest, yet as soon as the priests who carried the Ark reached the Jordan and their feet touched the water's edge, the water from upstream stopped flowing. It piled up in a heap a great distance away, and the Dead Sea was completely cut off. So the people crossed over opposite Jericho. The priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stopped in the middle of the Jordan and stood on dry ground while all Israel passed by until the whole nation had completed the crossing on dry ground. Skipping ahead, the Israelites did as Joshua commanded them. Joshua told them, because the Lord had told him, take 12 stones from the middle of this dry riverbed, which is not normally dry at this time of year. Take 12 stones and carry them over to your camp, where they put them down. And Joshua set up the 12 stones that had been in the middle of the Jordan at the spot where the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant had stood, and they are there to this day. Now it says, Joshua told the people, in the future, when your descendants ask you, what do these stones mean? Tell them, Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the Jordan before you until you had crossed over. The Lord your God did to the Jordan what he had done to the Red Sea, remembering long, long ago, a generation ago, what God did at the Red Sea, part of the Red Sea, when he dried it all up before us until we had crossed over. He did this so that all the peoples of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful and so that you might always fear the Lord your God. You see, the story, Joshua tells the story, and he tells others to tell the story. And the story, it points to God. And in the telling of the story, we remember and we learn and we are all together pointed to God. In fact, even if we look back in Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 20, when your children ask you, why are we following all these rules? God said, be sure to keep the commands of the Lord your God. They're told, be sure to keep the commands of the Lord your God. Do what is right. And when your children ask you, why do we do this? When your son asks, what is the meaning of these decrees and laws? Tell him, we were slaves of Pharaoh in Egypt, but the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. Before our eyes, the Lord sent signs and wonders. We're telling the story, we're remembering, and it's pointing to God. Even we talked before about the Passover in Exodus, when your children ask you, why do we do these things? Why do we remember these things? It's because we were slaves. It's because we were here and this is where God brought us. It's because this is what God has done for us. As we listen this morning to these stories of beautiful things, listen for ways that our stories point us to God and point the people, the owners, or the participants in these beautiful things to God. Joel is our first participant. Speaker, sharer, Joel, come on up.
Morning, folks. As Jill said, I'm Joel Ernst, and I get to go first, and I'm not sure if this is an enviable task, or I'll set the bar nice and low for everybody else. I don't know. We'll see. For those of you that may or may not know, in my daily life, I am a science teacher. So my beautiful thing today is science, which every time I meet people and I tell them I'm a science teacher, I get one of two responses. Usually the first one, oh, science, that sounds terrible. I hated science. Usually my response is because you didn't have me as a teacher. But very rarely do I get people that really enjoyed science, and I don't quite understand why. And Brian's waving, but very few of the rest of us, but there's a few of us out there. So my goal today is, I thought about, you know, doing a fun, you know, chemistry experiment, making things explode, or talking about the vastness of the cosmos or the complexity of the atom, and thought, you know, I'm going to do something easy, and I'm going to scientifically prove the existence of God. So while I enjoy teaching kids content and I enjoy all of that sort of thing, what I really find enjoyable is fixing misconceptions. So for instance, how many of you think that your blood is blue? Come on, there's got to be a few of you. I know you've heard this before at some point in your life. Chelsea, you're a nurse. You should know better. Your blood's never blue, folks. Ever. Okay, so when you look at your wrist, it looks like it's blue, right? Okay, so at some point along the line, I find that a lot of people had a teacher tell them this, or, you know, by their own experience, they look at your vein and it looks like it's blue. But it's not, it's dark red, and because of light transfusion and all that kind of fun stuff through your skin, it looks blue, but it's never blue. I don't know where this comes from. Right, Dr. Niebel? Right, thank you. It's red because of the iron. So the lesson that I'm going to tell you about is all about misconceptions, and you may have heard this before. This is not unique to me. If I find anything creative, it's probably because I stole it. It is sometimes attributed to Einstein, and while it has a certain air of verisimilitude, which I'm sad my dad's not here that I got to slip that word in, it's never been really actually proven that he said it. So my lesson starts off with the fact that there is no such thing as cold. Cold. Okay? And you're saying to yourself, well, Mr. Ernst, I'm Mr. Ernst in this scenario because that's, you know. You look outside and it's snowing, you go outside without your coat and you feel cold, right? So let's step back a little bit and talk about what heat is. Okay? Heat is the movement of molecules, right? And the faster that the molecules move, the more heat they have. So when we see this snow falling, it's falling as a solid. They're water particles held together tightly. They're still vibrating, though, and if we speed them up, they vibrate a little more and start to roll around on each other, and they turn into water. We speed them up a little bit more, and they start to break free, and they turn into water vapor. And we go through the different phases of matter, and there's plasma up there. We're not going to get into that. But it's all just different levels of heat. Okay? If I had a big thermometer here, we would say that it's hot up here, less heat, less heat, less heat, less heat, less heat. Right? But there's nowhere on that line where it's suddenly cold. Okay? It doesn't exist. It's defined by the absence of heat. So we use cold as a frame of reference and we talk about things being cold because nobody goes outside. Well, it's less heat out here. Doesn't make any sense. Okay? But we can't get to no heat. Okay? It's called absolute zero. It's -273.15 Celsius. We've never gotten there because it's the absence of heat. It's not possible. There's always some way to get heat in. It's an impossibility. We've tried. We've gotten really close within fractions of degrees, but we just can't get there. So there's no such thing as cold. Okay? Second point. There's no such thing as darkness. Okay? In much the same way, we define darkness by the absence of light. There's a lot of light, less light, less light, less light. If you've ever been somewhere like a cave where they turn off the lights and it's absolutely completely dark, it's just the absence of light. You can't see a thing. Your eyes don't work. Okay, no matter how long you spent in that cave, you would never develop the ability to see because our eyes work with light. So we define darkness by the absence of light. Okay? So if A equals B and B equals C, A must equal C, right? I'm sorry, I don't teach math. Commutative property, I think. So see, is there's no such thing as evil. Because we define evil by the absence of God. Okay? The bad things that happen to us, the bad things in the world, they're not evil. They're lack of God. And we as Christians are called to be light, we're called to be heat, and we're called to follow after God. So, there's my science lesson for the day. So hopefully, I've just, you know, ended all conflict between science and religion, and I'm sure that all of us will go forth and there will be nothing else to debate. We'll all accept all of our scientific theories as fact. But like I tell my students, if you believe in it, great, but science doesn't need you to believe in it to be true. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Phyllis Souter, and John and I and our children have come here to church since 1984, and I brought this beautiful quilt today made by my mother. For those of you who don't know, this pattern is called the Lone Star, and to get all of these points of all these pieces to match is quite a task. And the quilting for museum quality is, I think, Kim, 12 stitches per inch. I counted, there's 9 and 10 here. Mother was a very good quilter. So she actually made this quilt for Mary Beth because her favorite colors are yellow and green. And then with all the work that went into it, since Mary Beth has two cats who sleep with her, the whole family decided she shouldn't have the quilt. So it's never been used, but I cherish it. It'll go to one of our grandchildren, and I think it's beautiful. Thank you.
And Allison, we are going to invite the children to get a closer look. Kids, if you are in the audience and you would like a chance to come up and see what Allison has to share today, you may come and gather around the steps here.
So, hi, kids. Thanks for coming up. So, I got this book for my girls about a month and a half ago or so. And as I read it to them, I realized, this is actually really good for adults, too. I think kids are really good at seeing God in the world. Maybe they don't always realize that it is God, but, you know, as you see kids interact with creation, they have a wonder and an appreciation for the things that we tend to take for granted as adults. So, I just thought as... What's that? Oh, yeah. So the book is Maybe God is Like That Too. And as Joshua was doing the Into the Wilderness talks, I kept thinking how exciting it is to see God in the wilderness because it makes us lose some of the boxes that we put God in and helps us to see God in a new light and maybe reframe our vision of God. So, I kept thinking even like some of our ideas about God might need to be rewilded so that we can interact with our world in a way that we see God in the things that we take for granted are God. So I hope that makes sense, and I'll go ahead and read the book now. I live in the city where the sidewalks and subway cars and buildings and buses are packed with people, but I've never seen God before. Grandma, does God live in the city? I asked one morning at breakfast. Yes, God is here, she says. You just need to know where to look. Whenever you see love, joy, and peace, God is there, she says during her tea. Whenever there's patience, kindness, and goodness, God is there too. When you see faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control, that's God's spirit at work. Thanks. On the way to school, I'm on the lookout. I see a bus full of tourists and count 10 bright yellow taxis. I spy a man sweeping a stoop, and a grandma and I laugh when we see a tiny dog wearing a fluffy purple sweater. At school, Grandma holds my lunch and hugs me close before she says goodbye. That's what love looks like to me. Maybe God is like that too. On the swings, I pump so hard, I see over the wall into the alley. My friends shout, "Higher, higher," as my feet fly way up into the sky. That's what joy looks like to me. Maybe God is like that too. Outside, car horns blast and sirens scream, but my classroom is quiet and calm. That's what peace looks like to me. Maybe God is like that too. I try to tie my shoes, but the laces tangle around my fingers. My teacher sits down beside me and shows me how to tie them. That's what patience looks like to me. Maybe God is like that too. On the way home, I see a doorman wearing a red cape and a hat with a shiny brim. He's holding the door for a man using a wheelchair. The man moves very slowly, and the doorman chats with him and smiles. That's what kindness looks like to me. Maybe God is like that too. While I'm setting the table for dinner, there's a knock at the door. It's our neighbor from downstairs bringing us a loaf of bread. It's golden brown and warm and wrapped in a thin white towel. That's what goodness looks like to me. Maybe God is like that too. After dinner, I work on my homework while Grandma stands at the kitchen sink washing dishes and humming to herself, just like she does every single night. That's what faithfulness looks like to me. Maybe God is like that too. At bedtime, Grandma sits at the edge of my bed singing me a lullaby and stroking my head. She tucks my blankets up close around me. That's what gentleness looks like to me. Maybe God is like that too. I lie in bed, watching the curtains flutter. I want to talk about that dog we saw today and how high I can swing, but Grandma says that once I'm tucked in, I have to stay in bed until morning. I close my eyes and try to fall asleep. That's what self-control looks like to me. Maybe God is like that too. I liked that one too. I saw God over and over again today whenever I saw love, joy, and peace, and wherever there was patience, kindness, and goodness. When I saw faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control, I saw God's Spirit at work. I don't see God the way I see my friends or the streetlights or the river, but I see signs of God's Spirit all around me right here in the city. I know what God is like. Maybe I can be like that too. And you guys probably know this verse, but what this comes from is Galatians 5:22 and 23. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Thank you for letting me share.
Our next guest requires a little bit of preparation, so bear with us for 1 minute.
I'm Jason Horning, and I brought in a cow today.
So this is a cow that we actually raised from a calf. We bottle-fed her. Angela bottle-fed her because cows aren't very friendly naturally. So this is a miniature Zebu, which is a Brahman cattle. So they're one of the most ancient breeds of cattle that we know of. And their most defining feature is a large fatty hump right at the base of their neck. So I've always had a connection with animals, usually more than people. And so I thought it was my favorite animal that we have at the moment, and I'd come in and share it with everybody. Her name is Zoe. Zoe the Zebu. She's a year and 2 months old, so she'll get a little bit bigger. Not much. A few inches taller, but she'll get a lot longer and fuller. So she'll probably weigh 300 pounds when she's fully grown, compared to like 2,000 of a real cow. Yeah, kids can come up and pet her if they'd like. I would say just do it now. Let's pet the front end here. So you can pet her head.
We have a very popular item here. So Jason, are you going to have the cow outside somewhere that they can visit maybe after the service too? Is that going to be possible? Okay, yeah, we'll do that. And then you can visit her maybe after the service too, because while we clean this up, I'll have Rosemary come over here. She has some items down here that she's going to share about.
Hello, I'm Rosemary. I'm not a farmer, I'm a fisherman. And not that well educated, but I bet I can outfish yous. I brought some pictures in here of me and my beautiful daughters fishing and some shirts with horses on. So I'll tell you a little bit about my fishing trips. Each year, my two beautiful daughters and I go to Maryland to fish and to walk the boardwalk. We also go to the beach in Delaware and Virginia to see the little horses. Each year is a little different than the last. This year, there were four of us, because I feel God went along with us. It started out as a normal trip. The first day, we drove for 4 hours, and after getting to our room and unpacking, we ate some food we had bought at the grocery store on our way down. After that, we went fishing. The fishing was very good. We caught sea bass, oyster crackers. They're fish that have sharp teeth, and they eat oysters. You don't want to stick your finger in their mouth. Flounder and cod. We use sand fleas, squid, and crabs for bait. Never use fishing worms, because I tried it, and they don't like fishing worms. And also, when you fish, you put the sinker on the top and the hook on the bottom, because these fish eat off the bottom of the ocean. And no, I didn't go out in a boat. I can't swim, so I stayed on a pier. So on the second day, we woke up to the sound of the ocean and a beautiful sunrise. Also, right outside my door was this gigantic dragon. It was a balloon. It wasn't alive. And also a great big teddy bear, and I really liked looking at that. So the place we were staying at, they had free breakfast. We decided to take the elevator down. We should have taken the stairs, because it took forever for the elevator to get up there. Now I know why the bench was in the hallway to sit on, to wait. So the food was good. We had sausage, eggs, toast, muffins, bananas, apples, orange juice, milk, and coffee. Then we decided to see the little horses first. So as we were driving along, the check brake light came on. And so we stopped to get some brake fluid. But as soon as we put it in, it leaked back out. By this time, the brake pedal was going to the floor, and I was so sure we were going to get in a car accident. We found a garage that charged $105 an hour to work on your car. And we seen a park across the street, so we walked there, and while we waited, they checked the van, but it wasn't good news. They said the brake lining in the van was so rusted it couldn't be fixed. By this time, my stomach was doing a number on me. I get panic attacks. So we didn't know what to do, and we were far from our room, and it was 90 degrees outside. So I said to God, please help us get safely back to our room. So Christine, Melissa, and I talked about what we could do. And we were going to get AAA, but they'd only help us if we could get halfway home, and then they wanted $400. So that was out of the question. So we talked to our garage man, and he said that there was a used car place up the road. Well, it wasn't a used car place. It was a place you could rent a car. So we put a little bit of brake fluid in, and we got up there, and they said we could have a car, but not till the following day. So that had us concerned, too, because here we were in this van, you know, with bad brakes. So we put brake fluid in the van every couple miles, and with the help of God, we got back to our room. Christine and Melissa walked the beach, but I laid in bed because my stomach really done a number on me by then, and we didn't get much sleep. So the next morning, we ate our breakfast, packed all our things into the van. After putting brake fluid in the van again, we started to rent a car place. We drove very slowly, and with God's help, we got there. We got the use of a brand new van to drive around in that day. We took the old van to a car lot, and they promised they'd give us junk price, $300 for it. So we told them we'd send them the title as soon as we got back home. But we did enjoy the rest of the day walking along the beach in Delaware. We stopped at the shops. We got salt water taffy, and we ate a large pizza. We had French fries with melted cheese on, and we did get to see the horses. Some were running along the road. My daughter got some nice pictures of them, and we did make it home safely, thank God. And we knew that God had been with us all the way. He was looking out for us the whole time. Now, last year, we didn't have van problems. We had horse problems. First day down, it rained, so we didn't really get to see any of the horses. But the second day, it was beautiful. So we packed our picnic. And we packed a picnic and decided to eat at a picnic table. And we were sitting there eating, and someone yelled, "Here come the horses!" And, of course, they came right over to our table. I jumped up, and I ran over to the van. Melissa ran to the dumpster, and poor Christine stood there holding this bag of pretzels, hollering, "Help, Mom, help. The horses were trying to get her pretzels." And I think they won the bag of pretzels. It tore pretzels all over the place. They even got some of our pizza that day. And, of course, there was a woman there, and she come running down through, "Don't you know you're not supposed to feed the horses?" But that wasn't our choice. It was the horse's choice. And we're supposed to stay a butt's length away from them because they're dangerous animals. They're beautiful but dangerous. So some woman went down and helped Christine pack up the rest of the food. And one of the horses, it even followed us back to the van and stuck its head in. And this woman said, "I'm going to report you to the park ranger for feeding the horses." I mean, and as we were pulling out, they were pulling in. So the next time we go there, we're not going to have a picnic table at lunch. And if you do go there, if you see two men in a bathroom with this great big rod, they're only checking the bathroom for snakes. That had me scared, too. So anyway, that pretty well wraps up my trip. And I find God in nature, the ocean, the sunrise, simple little things like that, and I thank him for it, too. Thank you.
And Laura Lehman.
Hi, I'm Laura Lehman, and many of you know that I'm a family doc, so I mostly see patients in the outpatient setting in the office or in the hospital, but I have the distinct pleasure of occasionally delivering babies. And before you start rolling your eyes and expecting this to be like a gushy like thing about the miracle of life, hold on a second. You're right. but I want to tell you about a specific moment in time. When a baby is delivered, when a baby's born, everyone is relieved, right? Especially mom. But the providers and the nurses in the room are all waiting for one more thing to happen. They're waiting for a baby to take that first gasp of air, and which is usually followed by a lot of wailing, but we're all holding our breaths waiting for that gasp to occur. So that first breath of life is my beautiful thing. And you see that breathing is so ingrained in our being that for weeks and months prior to a baby being born, they are literally practicing breathing in the womb. They are breathing in that amniotic fluid that they are bathed in, and constantly practicing that. So by the time they are actually born, they do exactly what they have been practicing to do. And this is despite the fact that in the womb, our lungs are completely non-functional. We have no need to breathe as we think of it. We don't need that oxygen, that air, while we're in the womb. Our mom provides that for us completely. But by the time that we are born and we're thrust into the air, we do exactly what we have been practicing this whole time. We take that first breath. And that first breath of air starts a whole cascade of events that allows for us to actually be physically independent of our mothers. And so when that air rushes in, it quite literally parts like thousands of tiny little seas and thrusts that fluid out of our lungs and allows for that beautiful oxygen to come in and rush into our bloodstream and go to all of the tissues in our bodies. And at that same time, that air rushing in causes huge pressure changes that literally causes valves in and around the heart to close, and it changes the direction of blood flow so that that beautiful oxygen can go to the rest of our bodies and allow for us to be physically independent of our mothers. Still very much so dependent, but we can now be two separate beings as opposed to just one. And for me, my daily life is attempting to provide remedies for sick people in the office or in the hospital, for when our bodies fail us. And this is just a small, small reminder that we are beautifully and wonderfully made. So thank you.